Chapter 19. Nanny cried for Daddy and all he suffered. She knew he would have sacrificed himself for their welfare. Isn't that what he did in the end? Nanny thought of how he sacrificed his career by leaving the law, and his happiness by letting them go to Cleveland, not that he could have stopped his wife from doing anything she was determined to do. He'd sacrifice his health because he didn't consider his life worth living. Not all these insights were fully formed in her 16-year-old mind, but they were germs that grew over the years as she reached adulthood, married, and raised her own children. She never forgave her mother for her father's sad life and early death. When Nanny became a nurse, she forgave Abby because she had come to understand that Abby was a victim, just as Nanny and their father had been. Daddy had continued to be a victim long past his death when others sympathized with Mother for having a do-nothing husband who hadn't supported her in the ways she deserved. Still, at her mother's insistence, the story of why her father gave up his law practice became a family secret. Uncle Bob and eventually Eddie were the only other people who ever knew the story. Uncle Bob, because he was the one who directed Detective Wasserman to send the threatening letter to Harry, and Eddie, because Nanny needed someone she trusted to confide in. In truth, Harry hadn't cared about his own welfare. What Rose didn't know was that Harry visited Wasserman a third and final time. More accurately, he didn't visit Wasserman. He visited Wasserman's boss, the chief of police. They arranged to meet far from the precinct on Belmont Avenue. Harry told the chief all he knew. He couldn't be sure the chief was honest and would not protect Wasserman, but he had to tell someone in authority. Harry told the chief how he figured out Bob and Wasserman knew each other, and that Bob had purposely selected him as the defense attorney for Ash Weisskopf, betting that Harry wouldn't find out what Weisskopf's buddies were up to, and wouldn't tell if he did. Bob knew Harry was desperate for money and to win a criminal case. The police chief listened while Harry told him how the jury tampering and the bribing of the judge were undoubtedly linked to Wasserman, who knew Bob, Harry's brother-in-law. Bob had friends who were gangsters in Cleveland and New York. Harry described how Ryan Murphy contacted Harry and their attempts to talk to the judge and the DA. Finally, he explained Ryan Murphy's death was probably not accidental. His death was deliberate and a warning to Harry and anyone else who interfered. Harry felt relieved to have put the pieces together and gotten them off his chest. He offered to write down everything he'd said and sign it, but wanted his own lawyer present. Then he'd received the note telling him to stop. Rose never knew Bob's role in sending the threatening letter to Harry, because Harry refused to discuss it once he'd made his decision to leave the law. It was too painful to revisit what had happened. He wanted to forget and move on. He never forgot. It ate away at him as surely as his diabetes did. It turned a highly intelligent, intellectual man into someone who did everything he could to cope with the hand dealt him. He'd frequently berated himself for not seeing it all beforehand. He had still been young and not long out of law school. He'd been so eager for a case that would put him on the map and give his family everything they wanted and needed. He didn't consider what was right in front of him. Harry had been depressed ever since. His efforts to make money running the furniture shop, the Army-Navy store, and finally the garden store had been sincere but half-hearted. He knew he'd not been alone in the trouble he'd had finding work as an attorney. It was the 1930s. Many Jewish attorneys had trouble getting work and had to resort to other types of jobs. But for them, those jobs would be temporary. For him, they were permanent and all he could ever hope for. He wasn't a salesman and couldn't tell white lies about products he didn't believe in. He'd given people credit when he should have known better. He put his principles above his family. He thought his wife had abandoned hers altogether. Abby grieved for her father, but couldn't contain her excitement that her love life was finally beginning to take shape. She'd been immediately attracted to Ira, who had a hairs and dark brown eyes. He looked strong and capable. He told her he was good at his job, a born salesman who could talk circles around his customers. He'd learned a lot watching the guys who hung out at Silver Rods. Ira confessed he was a mediocre student, less interested in academics than in sports. He played football in school, but was too small to play well. He explained that sports taught him how to squash his opponents. He used many of the same principles in his work. She started going steady with Ira. She didn't tell anyone. They planned to elope and then tell her family. Ira insisted she meet his family before they left, to make sure she liked them. Ira's family had been living in the same house in Brownsville since his mother was born. She told Abby her parents came from Russia in the previous century. Ira's father died in an accident when he was young. But Abby remembered Ira's brother from a class in high school. His sister was in one of Mary's classes. They seemed nice enough. 3 months after they met, Abby and Ira eloped to Niagara Falls. She told her mother she was taking a trip by herself and not to argue about it. She had to be alone for a while. "But you've never done that before. How will you manage?" asked Mother when Abby told her over breakfast. "I'm almost 20 years old. I have to do it some." "I can't have you holding my hand forever," said Abby, her voice rising as she spread strawberry preserves on an English muffin. "What will you do if something happens? What if you get hurt or get lost?" asked Mother tentatively, afraid Abby would clam up and refuse to tell her more. "Then I will have to deal with it myself. I think it's about time you let me go, Mother. Anyway, that's all I'll say about it. I'm packed and I have my bus ticket. I'll leave this evening and see you in a few days." Abby rose from her chair. She hid her smile behind her coffee cup and walked briskly out of the room. Rose sat with her head in her hands, unable to fathom what she'd been told. Then she grabbed the telephone Laura had installed. "Laura," she called into the phone. "Laura, you won't believe what Abby just said to me. What should I do?" "What can you do? She's an adult. She's going to do what she wants." "What do you want to do? Tie her to a chair?" "Come over. We'll have coffee," said Laura to Rose's relief. Abby and Ira returned the following Saturday and went immediately to see Rose. Abby entered the apartment first, carrying her suitcase. She wore a soft gray suit and a cloche hat with veil. She carried gloves and a purse in her hand. Her mother ran to the door. Mary stood at the other end of the room, startled. "Abby, my darling, you're home. I've been so worried. You never even called. What was I to think? Come in and tell us all about your trip. My, you look lovely. Where'd you get that beautiful suit?" "From me. I bought it for her," said Ira on the threshold, holding two more suitcases. "I bought her a lot of other stuff besides. My bride deserves the best." "Bride? Mom and you, who is this young man? Are you married?" Rose spit the words out, unsure if she should be happy or angry. She wished Laura was there. Natty came up behind her mother. "Hi, I'm Natty." "Welcome to the family," she said with a snicker. "Hey, Natty, great to meet you," said Ira, shaking Natty's hand like he would a longshoreman. Rose took a step backwards to sit on the couch, out of the way of Natty, Abby, and Ira. To Natty's surprise, Abby hugged her and showed her her wedding ring. "We went to Niagara Falls. It was the most beautiful sight I've ever seen," gushed Abby to Natty and her mother. "It's a gorgeous ring, Abby." "You're so lucky," said Natty, genuinely happy for her sister. Rose finally gathered herself to stand and give Ira a half-hearted hug. She still didn't know how she should feel. He grabbed her in a big hug that reminded her of Harry. "Why don't we all sit down?" suggested Natty, helping Rose to move back to the couch, sitting down beside her. That left Abby and Ira in the chairs. benches close to Abby's, where Harry liked to sit by the window. As Rose listened to Abby describe her wedding trip, she realized she felt relieved she would no longer have to manage Abby by herself. She doubted Ira had witnessed any of Abby's incidents. Maybe she should be happy for her daughter and for herself. Although she couldn't believe Abby hadn't told her about Ira or the elopement before she left, she always thought they were so close. She listened to Ira tell her daughter she was warm, intelligent, and very beautiful. How that must make Abby feel. Had anyone ever said that before? Rose was used to hearing those words about herself. She understood their impact. Rose decided she would accept this marriage, but wanted to see Abby married in the synagogue. I bet Laura will help us pay for the wedding, she said after several minutes of silence. It was the first time she had spoken since greeting Abby. Yes, I'm sure she would, she said, mostly to herself, gazing at her hand and her own wedding ring. Oh, mother, would she? I'd love that, said Abby, rising from her chair to kiss her mother. Natty, you can be my maid of honor. How about that? I found my Errol Flynn. Ira rose from his chair as soon as Abby had, trying to impress his mother-in-law with his gentlemanly manners. He pulled Abby aside to whisper, I'm sure I can afford to pay for a small wedding. Who's this Laura? Who's Laura? Asked Abby loudly, facing her mother and sister. Laura is my mother's best friend. She's rich. We could have a big wedding and a beautiful reception. Mother, do you think Laura would host the reception at her house? It's so much bigger than ours. Of course, darling, said Rose, snatching her eldest daughter away from her new husband, hugging her conspiratorially while moving them both into the kitchen. Natty and Ira stared at each other until Natty looked away. She left Ira sitting in the chair by the window, grabbed her sweater, and went outside to sit.